My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United Podcast. We're having two returnees now. We have Arianna Del Signore and we have
Chaz Leather.
I'll tell you, 3:30. I know exactly who you are.
You almost made me forget it, too.
Tell us about your interest in the subject that we have today.
Well, it actually kind of came, these conversations first started when Arianna and I were working on the questions for the upcoming camp video. We just finished our round of interviews on those. And the theme for next year is going to be, forget the exact wording of it, but it's like anchoring yourself to God. Mm-hmm. And my question was, so if God is the rock, then what is the anchor? And we kept coming back to this idea of hope, and that like hope is the thing that connects you with God, hope and faith. But every time we talked about hope, it felt like this abstract concept. And we were really interested in kind of demystifying it.
I think we hear that word all the time in the church and just in the world. You know, if someone's sick, oh, I hope you're feeling better. But a lot of times we don't really think about it as like, what does hope mean on a personal level and more concretely? And what's the difference kind of between like an active hope, like a living hope, and just an idle, wishful hope?
Well, you know, one thing that I find too is that you can find a formula to it more than just making some vague prayer. But if I take a look at scriptures, like hope is the anchor of the soul, which is Hebrews 6:19. I just know that, you know, God won't leave us. And that is one of the three big things of 1 Corinthians 13, mm-hmm. Love, faith, and hope.
Yeah, when you're feeling sad or you're feeling depressed, usually those emotions kind of, they feel like they're going to last forever. You don't know that for sure because you don't know the future. And that's the comforting and kind of scary thing about being alive. But I think we need to find these actions that we can take that remind us that there's more to life than what we're feeling at that present moment.
It's like an expectation that you know 100% you're going to make it through this because of past faith experiences when God's kind of rewarded your faith and has shown you that he's there. And I think that's the biggest thing, because a lot of times we think of hope as feeling good and feeling okay when things are bad, but it's more than that.
And one thing in talking to people to get them back into a hopeful state of mind is to tell them that you got to reconnect and have that type of relationship with God where you know that he will help you.
Especially if you're feeling, you know, sad or depressed, it's good to look back on another time that you felt that same way and then it ended.
Mm-hmm. I think it's very, very important too, because those who commit suicide, it's mostly because they've lost hope.
Yeah.
It isn't that they lost faith, you know, but like one of the differences between faith and hope, one example that I always kind of go to as a bellwether is that I can have faith in the resurrection because it's biblical. It's said in many different places. That's faith. That's what you believe. Mm-hmm. But hope is that you will be in that resurrection. Mm-hmm. I mean, that it's very personalized, you know, for you. So hopelessness is when you take yourself out of that community of thought and protection and don't think that you're involved or that you matter or that you are of any value. Mm-hmm. And so in talking with people who are hopeless is to help them see their value and get them reconnected to those things that they believe.
And I always think of when I was in ABC, Dr. Dunkel always talked about the Yeti promises and even had like a little Yeti stuffed animal and a little Yeti cup. And he talked about them a lot. And basically the idea was that, you know, in all these passages, there's chapters and chapters of God punishing Israel and saying, you know, you're going to be dragged off to Babylon and you're going to be dragged off in chains and all these terrible things are going to happen to you because you didn't obey. But there's always that yet I promise, yet I will return, yet I will remember you, yet I will forget you. And there always, there's always hope. And I think that's helped me a lot because as I go through things in my life, whether it's something that I've done that's kind of brought these bad circumstances on me or whether it's just a trial I'm going through to help my faith, I have that yet I promise that God will follow through and God will be there at the end of it and that he's basically there through it, getting me through it.
What is the power of real active hope?
I think it's a comfort and a certainty. You know, as things happen to you, you have this ingrained hope that no one can take away from you no matter what.
For me to answer that, I really need to kind of first frame what I think hope is, which is kind of just a vision of the future, like for having like a strong vision of the future for me and trying to have a positive outlook on the future. So my hope is just that I continue to grow. up until the moment you die, even if it's at 110 years old, you remain a student of life, and that you never, you know, start telling yourself that you know everything and that there's nothing left for you to learn. So I think my biggest hope is that I just continue learning.
And that you don't get to the point where you know it all.
Yeah, I don't want to get too full of myself.
Yeah, we talked about Viktor Frankl before, but in Viktor Frankl's
book.
That's
a good story.
Yeah. So I haven't actually read Man's Search for Meaning since high school, but it did make a huge impact on me. I wasn't in a great place in high school, and I think I needed some more hope in my life. And it's not necessarily a religious book, but basically in it, Viktor Frankl talks about the fact that one of the biggest differences that he noticed between prisoners that died in concentration camps and those who survived starvation and abuse and the terrible situations that they were in was that they had hope. And one specific example that I have always remembered is that between Christmas Day and New Year's, one year, I think it was 1943 maybe, a lot of prisoners died, like more so than usual. And, you know, you could say, okay, it was because it was really cold out. It's that time of year, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he said it was because a lot of the prisoners thought that they would be freed by Christmas. So when Christmas came and went and they had no hope, that was what they had set their life on. Like, I'm going to survive because I'm going to be freed by Christmas. And that didn't happen. That broke down their hope. They were hopeless, and mm-hmm. they lost the will. And obviously, there are more factors, I think, to that.
But see, that shows a power there. I mean, yeah. It's more than just a good feeling.
Yeah, I think it's a physical. In some ways, it can be a physical response. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be going through the same thing physically that someone else is, and just the fact that you have a tangible hope, the difference can be your life and your health. And I think it's more powerful than sometimes we give it credit for.
I think these psychosomatic things, you know,
yeah.
It's psycho-spiritual.
Yeah,
it's
true.
You know, survival. And it's powerful. It's what people think in the frame of mind that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do to pull out of that.
Yeah.
That story makes me think of back to what you said a few minutes ago about it comes down to expectation. Like mm-hmm. hope and expectation seem to be kind of intertwined, is that... I don't want to talk too much about myself exercising because then I'm going to feel like one of those people. but I have noticed that when I'm exercising, let's say it's push-ups, I've noticed that my body starts to give out right before I get to the number I set for myself. So let's say I told myself to do 30 push-ups. At 25, my body starts to get out. But if I tell myself to do 100 push-ups, if that's my goal, then my body starts to give out at 95. So it's all about kind of where your head is and stuff like that. And I don't want to say that that's exactly what they were going through, because I cannot imagine what it was like being in the Holocaust. But it seems kind of like the same pattern, kind of like you start to wear down when you get to the end of the vision that you had for yourself.
I hate to totally just take your sports metaphor, but it reminded me of...
No, as long as I'm not the only one talking about working out, we're good.
Well, I'll join you in this.
Thank you. And then Vic, you can...
Okay, I had a sports metaphor this morning. I was on my exercise bike. It's supposed to go 14 minutes and 11 minutes.
See? There we go.
There we go.
I thought I was going to do the 14, and then all of a sudden it just... I just had all kinds of excuses flow through my head.
Next time, tell yourself to do 30 minutes, and I bet you'll do...
I'll do the 14.
Yeah. So what was your...
But yeah, so I've been long distance running for like many years, and it's always been every single race I've ever run, like when I was in middle school, high school, just road races, the last like quarter mile when you can see the finish line is mm-hmm. always the hardest. But I remember how I feel as soon as I cross that finish line, and it helps me get through that. Runners call it your second wind, where you basically turn your mind off and you just kind of go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same in life. You know, when you remember those times when God stepped in for you, I think it helps you get through whatever you're going through now.
Just to kind of piggyback even more off of that, I think this is like another huge topic, so we might have to do another one of these, but kind of gets into God's attitude about work. And that's something that's been really interesting to me lately, because up until like just a couple of years ago in my life, work was always defined as the thing I didn't want to do. Like if there was something that I had to do that I didn't want to do, that's what work was. The other stuff was fun. And it gave me this kind of twisted idea that work was abuse, and that's like what the paycheck was for. Like, you allow yourself to go through 40 hours of abuse and do something you hate, and then you get compensation for it. And that's obviously, that is not, you know, God's attitude towards work, and that's not what it's supposed to be. Because I think I think work is kind of tied into hope in the sense of setting goals, setting very clear goals. And again, if we're, I don't know how you guys feel about it, but for me, like, definition of hope being, you know, that vision that you see for yourself and striving for it, that all comes down to coming up with goals. You've got the big goal and then you've got like the little goals. When I was in school, we had mentors and we had these big month-long goals and year-long goals. And then we had smaller, like, incremental week-long goals. Mm-hmm. And then you'd accomplish your week-long goal every week and you'd adjust and you'd kind of take stock in the past week. And before you knew it, by the end of the year, you'd like accomplish this crazy thing that you thought was, that was really daunting to begin with. For me, if you're talking about the practical side of hope, I think that's what it boils mm-hmm. down to.
One thing I'd like to say about hope too is that hope is one of the gifts of God, you know, to us. It's one of those things that God obviously can give you, mm-hmm. you know, and it's more than just, oh, I better be hopeful. And, you know, all these physical things are great and fine. I mean, they're good habits. There's all kinds of books about, you know, mm-hmm. about things. But in talking to people who are hopeless, they don't want to. They just absolutely, totally are disgusted with having to do anything. Because why are they disgusted? Because they're hopeless. You mm-hmm. know? And you're trying to give them hope, but they're hopeless.
Yeah.
And but to ask God to give them that gift of hope, I do believe it works. I do believe God will answer that when you ask Him for it.
Yeah, because when you're in that moment, even though the best thing for you to do when you're having any kind of a problem is to take steps to fix that problem. Mm-hmm. It's not rocket science, but emotionally, it's really hard to see the purpose in doing it. It's like, why fix this problem? Because there's just going to be another problem tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about hope is that it does give you that jump start. Because it's because mm-hmm. once it gets going, you know. Like when I was in college, I had a crazy schedule and did a million assignments a week. And I don't know how I did it, but like when you're in the thick of it, you just kind of keep going off of this inertia that you have. So once you get going, it's okay. But like getting started is absolutely the hardest part. And hope is the thing that inspires you to take that those first few steps. And then hopefully it just keeps going.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So that actually happened today. I write a column for the e-news, you know, every week, and sometimes I get stuck. I just mm-hmm. can't get. I have a blank screen, and I have a couple sentences there, and I say, "How in the world am I going to have mm-hmm. this work out?" But then I ask God, you know, this morning, because I finished it up at 4 o'clock this mm-hmm. morning. You know, please give me the thoughts I need to finish it up. I really feel God help me.
Yeah.
Because all of a sudden I became hopeful, and it's going to work again. Mm-hmm. I also know this, is that the time of mental blocks and writer blocks is going to happen mm-hmm. again sometime.
Yeah, yeah.
But you learn to have hope as a way of life. Mm-hmm. You know, but what can you do to help sustain and perpetuate a culture of hope in the church and elsewhere?
I think sharing hope, sharing experiences with people, like just opening up to people when you're feeling hopeless and when you have hope. Because chances are people in the church who, you know, everyone has feelings of hopelessness, even though we know better and mm-hmm. we shouldn't, but we're human.
And that is a gift. When somebody comes to you negative and said that, you know, somebody dumped me or, mm-hmm. I'm in debt or, you know, I can't pay my credit card bill or whatever. Yeah, that's the way it is. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can make it very, very negative to them. Mm-hmm. Or you can be filled with God's Holy Spirit and tell them, well, there's things you can do. You know, and this isn't the end. And this has happened to me. You know, you could even share an experience that you have had that wasn't the best, but how you pulled through it mm-hmm. and sharing, in a sense, sustaining a culture of hope, especially at a time when not only do they have the normal things to fight in life, but also, look, we talked the environmental things from global warming to, you know, who knows what, mm-hmm. and feeling depressed.
Yeah, I think it's... the way to kind of perpetuate this, a more hopeful culture is to only concentrate on the problem as long as it takes you to figure out a solution to it. So I do understand that, like you mentioned, a breakup, if you're going through a breakup, take a day or maybe more than a day.
No, it's going to be more than a day.
Take a reasonable amount of time to kind of take the initial sting of it first. And then, you know, I was going to say, don't gripe to people too much about it. Sometimes you need to
vent,
confide mm-hmm. in people mm-hmm. or vent, but really don't get caught in a cycle of just, you know, feeding off of that problem. Because I think that's something people can get stuck on, is some problem will arise and they spend so much time complaining about it to the people around them and getting affirmation. You know, other people are saying like, yeah, you're right. That's ridiculous. That shouldn't have happened. Okay, if you're right or wrong, if it never should have happened, whatever, it happened, now you need to take steps to fixing it. And I'd say try to skip to that part as quickly as possible.
I think, yeah, how it is so true that hope is so much like of action.
Well, in college, one of the structures is hopelessness is laziness.
Well, I think they work in tandem, though, hopelessness and laziness, the same way that, you know, work and hope work together.
You don't want to do anything about it. You just, it's work.
Yeah.
yeah. I think even, the more you do and the more you're like continuously just going forward, even if you you just kind of are trusting the process, I think that's a natural alleviant to hopelessness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had a ministerial conference here just this last week up in Northeast Ohio, and there was a question in a roundtable discussion about just exactly that. Mm-hmm. And if you can listen to somebody vent for a while, you know, when somebody's hurting, you don't want to say, well, you shouldn't feel that way. Well, it just makes it worse. But if you can sympathize, I know how you feel, or I'm sure that it's hard and all that. But then you start steering the conversation into a constructive, positive way. That shows your love for the person. Because if you really just allow a person to get worse, you have worse consequences.
Yeah, and you really want, you mentioned empathy. Empathy is so important. You want to help this person, you know, assuming that you're not the person who's dealing with whatever it is. Say it's a friend of yours and they're venting to you and they're complaining. You want to help them not because you're tired of hearing them complain, but because you feel for them. You need to let them know that you feel for them, and then you need to help them get out of it. And a lot of times, like, that is like at first, that's how me and like my closest friends are, is that when one of us is dealing with a problem, we'll usually just show up at the other person's house. We won't say a word about the problem. We'll just hang out
together.
And, yeah, exactly. We'll do other things that just kind of, you know, alleviate some of the anxiety that's going on. And then when all that subsided, when we deal with the emotional part of it, because emotions are real and they're things that we have to face, once we work through that part of it, then it's good to help your friend get through that and start coming up with real steps.
Ariana, it looks like you want to say something.
Well, that kind of, both of your comments kind of reminded me of something I was thinking about before and had wanted to talk about, is just choosing hope, that it's a choice, that it's not something that kind of floats by and you grab it. It's, you choose it every day, and remembering that God will never give you more than you're able to handle. And, you know, sometimes I think even thinking that and knowing when you're going through something terrible, a breakup or just something, there's way worse things than a breakup, I guess. It's not.
I don't know. When you go through a breakup, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen. I remember.
It feels like the worst in the moment, I guess. But, you know, anything terrible that goes on, even just having that mentality of, I know, as terrible as this seems, and I don't even see a way out of it, I have this faith and I have this hope. I know that God won't, he hasn't given me more than I can bear, so I can bear this.
And this is, I don't know if this is off topic or what. This might even open a whole new can of worms that we need to have another episode about.
Trying to get those other episodes in.
I'm trying to get some job security. But you talked about faith too. And I think faith and trust are pretty much the same thing. Like, except faith is more specific towards God and his truth. So it's kind of this trust that you build with God that you will each uphold your end of the covenant. And the reason I think this is interesting is because it kind of ties everything together. The way that you show love and trust to God is by keeping his commandments and living his way of life. And then the way that he shows love and trust to you is that he upholds all the promises. So that's like a macrocosm of what we were talking about with work earlier. And it's this action that you have to do. You don't just pray every night and say, you know, hey, God, I trust you. Okay, good night. You have to actually live your life in a way that shows him that you trust him. And I think that's kind of the faith of it. But it is this thing that you can build on in a practical way.
Well, yes, you said there's several things that we can talk about here that we're going to cover here. But I just want to thank you both very much for the discussion that we had here about a very important subject, the subject of hope and what we as Christians can do to motivate others to be hopeful.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So thank you very much for joining us here on Inside United. Please come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.